Coming up on Fronteras, farmers say they need workers, and in theory, the government's H-2A visa program's there to help.
Sure, the H-2A program says go ahead and bring farm workers in, but the H-2A program doesn't work, and so consequently nobody uses it.
Fronteras' series on immigration reform continues. We examine prospects for an overhaul to the nation's guest worker program. Also, part of the debate over immigration reform is how to prevent employers from hiring undocumented immigrants. Arizona already has plenty of experience using a mandatory employment verification system known as E-Verify.
Arizona was the test case, and we ended up debugging the system for everybody else.
We look at what's happening on the ground after Arizona required employers to use E-Verify 5 years ago. But first, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created via an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among 7 public radio stations and funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting as part of its local Journalism Center initiative. I'm Crystal Chavez. A strong employment verification system is one of the main planks included in the blueprint for immigration reform recently released by the bipartisan group of senators. The plan calls for a mandatory program that would prevent employers from hiring unauthorized immigrants. But making a system that works isn't easy. In our next installment of our Fronteras series, Broken Border, Immigration Reform in the Southwest, reporter Jude Jaffe Block explores the lessons learned when Arizona required employers use an existing program called E-Verify.
Several states now require every employer to run newly hired workers through E-Verify, an online federal program that cross-checks identity information against federal databases. Arizona's mandate that took effect in 2008 was the first in the country to extend to all employers. Back then, Ross Tappan was in charge of this dairy in Mesa, just outside of Phoenix. He was overseeing up to 90 employees, many of them Latino immigrants.
Well, there's everything from milking cows to driving tractors to feed them, breeding cows.
A critical workforce, and one Tappan didn't want to lose in an immigration raid. So before starting with E-Verify, he did an internal audit of his employees' files. He found many workers' social security numbers didn't check out.
They had to either get it straight or we couldn't employ them.
He lost 12 people that way. And from that point forward, he turned away new hires who couldn't pass E-Verify. Law-abiding managers like Tappan are at least part of the reason that some unauthorized immigrants did leave the state. But not everyone took the mandate seriously. A study that compared E-Verify queries from Arizona with census data on new workers suggests that in 2011, a third of new hires weren't checked in the system. Why? There's no teeth in the mandate. It's one of a number of lessons learned in the past 5 years here.
Arizona was the test case, and we ended up debugging the system for everybody else.
Julie Pace is a Phoenix employment attorney. For instance, some legal workers are incorrectly flagged by the system, and some undocumented immigrants can pass. E-Verify isn't immune to identity theft.
We had one name that was used 266 times in the country to pass E-Verify and let them work.
Pace says the most important lesson Arizona learned by testing the system is that any workplace enforcement like E-Verify cannot be effective on a national scale as long as there are millions of undocumented workers.
Because then people have to keep lying to work in this country. So you have to have a visa program for service workers. You have to, or you will crash the entire economy in the country.
One proposal to beef up the integrity of the system is to attach some kind of biometric marker, like fingerprints, to it. But that would be costly and is a red flag for privacy advocates, including Alex Narasta of the Libertarian Cato Institute.
And I just don't think the government is very good at making or maintaining large databases like it needs to do if it wants to make the system work.
And in the end, he says, determined undocumented immigrants will find a way around any employment verification system.
And all it does is make it more difficult for the rest of us who are law-abiding workers to get lawfully employed.
One thing E-Verify can do is offer employers some peace of mind when immigration agents come knocking. Federal I-9 audits of employment paperwork have skyrocketed in recent years, up from less than 800 in the last 2 years of the Bush administration to well over 5,000 in the past 2 years under President Obama. Among those audited, the dairy in Mesa that Ross Tappan managed. Two Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents showed up 2 years ago.
They gave us a list of everything we had to do, pull all of our records, make copies of it.
Using E-Verify made Tappan's audit less painful. When ICE identified 10 more employees who were working illegally, the dairy wasn't fined, likely in part because using E-Verify showed the dairy had tried to hire lawfully. Afterward, Tappan said he finally felt relief, knowing for certain his workforce was legitimate.
You don't worry about, oh my gosh, getting raided and getting called, you know, hey, we got cows to milk and nobody's here.
Nationwide, only about 7% of companies are currently using E-Verify. How it could be implemented nationally, what changes would be part of that mandate, is likely to be a key part of the upcoming immigration reform debate. In Phoenix, I'm Jude Jaffe Block.
Senators crafting the immigration reform bill said undocumented farm workers in the U.S. should get an expedited path to citizenship for their role in securing the nation's food supply. That's good news for workers and their bosses, who say a labor shortage is forcing farms to let fruit fall to the ground. But farmers want more. They also want lawmakers to overhaul the nation's guest worker program, which they say makes it hard to bring in foreign workers when labor is scarce. For the last in our Fronteras series, Broken Border, Immigration Reform in the Southwest, Adrian Florido reports on the prospects.
Noel Staley's organic farm is at the end of a winding country road an hour north of San Diego.
These are navel oranges. They're good. They're a little tart.
It's 200 acres, but his crops, mostly orange and avocado groves, stretch out in rows across just 110 of those acres.
I have had to cut back on what I plant in my fields, decided not to harvest some things because I couldn't get the labor to do it.
This has been a common complaint among farmers for a few years, that the economy and tough immigration enforcement have sapped the local workforce dry. Now, in theory, this shouldn't be a problem. A federal guest worker program called H-2A allows Staley or any farmer in the nation to bring in as many temporary foreign workers, say from Mexico, as they need. But Staley laughs when I ask why he hasn't.
I'm not doing it.
Eric Larson, who directs the San Diego County Farm Bureau, doesn't blame him.
Sure, the H-2A program says go ahead and bring farm workers in, but the H-2A program doesn't work.
To participate, farmers have to prove to the Labor Department that they tried to hire U.S. workers but couldn't. They have to transport guest workers from their home country, provide housing and three meals a day. They also have to show their guest workers won't depress local wages. All this means lots of money, paperwork, often attorneys.
And so consequently, nobody uses it. I think we've got one farmer in San Diego County that uses the H-2A for about 8 workers, where in reality we have 10 to 12,000 farm workers in San Diego County.
Nationally, farmers recruit about 55,000 H-2A workers each year, mostly in Florida and the Midwest. But as talk of immigration reform heats up, the farm lobby wants to make hiring these workers easier. What Larson wants is pretty simple: a card that would let Mexican farm workers cross the border when needed,
and then return home when the seasonal needs are over.
But that proposal is meeting resistance, largely from groups concerned that a liberalized guest worker program could hurt all workers. They point to stories like this man's, who asked me not to use his name so as not to jeopardize his chances of getting hired to pick tomatoes this summer. He's picked fruit in San Diego since he arrived illegally in the 70s. He became a citizen when Ronald Reagan signed an amnesty, and for years he's picked on a large tomato farm that has used temporary H-2A workers.
A todos nos dicen, órale, muévele, muévele.
He says working alongside guest workers has increased pressure to pick fruit quickly. The guest workers are young and expected to work fast for long hours. He says the older workers like him are expected to keep up, but that's impossible. So he worries about getting rehired next season. Cynthia Rice is an attorney for California Rural Legal Assistance, which provides legal aid to farm workers. She says this worker's story highlights the threat H-2A poses to both guest workers and U.S. farm workers.
The H-2A program still creates a second class of workers.
She says that because under H-2A, guest workers can't switch employers. If they're overworked or mistreated, they can either stick it out or go home.
The H-2A worker can't really vote with his feet.
And she says that captive workforce makes it easy for an employer to impose grueling production demands. That's hard on young guest workers who have no choice. And it's also bad for older, slower ones like our farm worker who fears being replaced. These concerns are driving some advocacy groups across the country to oppose any kind of guest worker program. They say labor is available, and their focus is on legalizing the millions of undocumented people already in the U.S. so they can fill these jobs and possibly demand higher wages. But the push is also on by industry and farmers who say they have to remain competitive. A reformed and expanded guest worker program is widely expected, which is why some advocates are pushing for more worker protections. Noel Staley, the citrus and avocado farmer, says what's clear to him is that he needs the work and the proofs in his empty fields.
How come that's so tough? Because our politics doesn't want to do it.
For the first time in a long time, it looks like politicians are serious about tackling this issue. In San Diego, I'm Adrian Florido.
Coming up, national organizations are weighing in on the immigration debate.
The devil is in the details, and we don't have much in the way of details. But, you know, their framework also seems to begin with the premise that the United States somehow has to make things right with the people who broke our laws before we even think about making things right with the American public.
What I think is really important is that that pathway to citizenship be streamlined, that it's not a process for years in which we continue to have an indefinite underclass.
More after a short break. Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. As lawmakers continue the process of hammering out immigration reform proposals, many experts are weighing in. We're going to hear from two groups with two very different visions for how the country should overhaul its immigration system. First up is Ira Melman. He's with the Federation for American Immigration Reform, a national nonprofit that works on immigration policy with the goal of stopping illegal immigration. Melman believes the president is looking at the issue through the wrong lens.
You know, the president seems to look at immigration from the perspective of the immigrants themselves. And I think everybody understands that immigration always benefits immigrants. Nobody comes to this country, whether they come legally or illegally, unless it is substantially in their interest to be here. It also, in some ways, benefits certain employers who get to hire illegal workers at a wage that is considerably lower than what they would have to pay an American, and then they get to pass the cost along, health care, education, all the things that human beings need once they arrive here, to the rest of the American taxpayers. The issue, however, is what impact does all this have on ordinary Americans, on people trying to earn a living, on the 22 million people who are either unemployed or underemployed in this country at this time, on kids who are attending schools that have become overwhelmed with the burdens associated with lots of kids who don't speak English, have special needs. All these considerations, the president doesn't seem to be terribly concerned about them. A lot of people in Congress don't seem terribly concerned about them. But again, that is really the essence of our immigration law. That's why we have immigration laws. That's why every nation on earth has immigration laws, because we understand that what might be in the individual interest of a person in another country to come here doesn't necessarily benefit the interest of people living in this country, and in fact might harm significant numbers of people in this country.
What do you think about the proposals that we're hearing from that bipartisan group of senators working on this?
Well, you know, it is a bipartisan group. I'm not sure it represents the views of any more people than the eight people who went into that room and hammered out this framework. And by the way, all it is a framework at this point. The devil is in the details, and we don't have much in the way of details. But, you know, their framework also seems to begin with the premise that the United States somehow has to make things right with the people who broke our laws before we even think about making things right with the American public. You know, the American people have been promised countless times over the past 25 years that the government would get serious about enforcing our immigration laws. And yet, you know, after the amnesty in 1986, which they promised us would be a one-time only thing, here we are in 2013. We've got four to five times as many illegal immigrants living in the country as we did back then. And we're getting the same promises, only this time we know that we know in advance the promises aren't going to be kept. The president has said, unless somebody comes to this country illegally and then goes on to commit some serious violent felony after they're here, he is not interested in enforcing our immigration laws. So, you know, he's saying, you know, Congress, go ahead, put whatever you want in the bill, promise the American public the sun, the moon, and the stars, but I'm just not going to enforce it. And the result will be that within a few years, we will be right back in the same situation because people will understand, you come to the United States illegally, as long as you don't do anything too terrible, you're going to get to remain here.
So if you pose the most controversial part, the pathway to citizenship, no matter how long it would take or all the rules that would pertain to that, which are still being worked out, what do we do with the 11 million undocumented immigrants already here?
Well, we don't necessarily do anything, and that's the fallacy. You know, the people try to set this up as a choice between granting amnesty or pathway to citizenship, whatever language you want to choose, versus deporting everybody. And of course, we don't have to deport everybody. You know, illegal immigrants are actually very, very rational people. They came here for very rational reasons. They believed that if they got to the United States, they'd be able to get jobs, they'd be able to get access to many services and benefits, that there would be very little in the way of enforcement. And so, not surprisingly, a lot of people have come to the United States illegally. If we start to reverse those expectations, you know, the president talked about the need for an electronic verification system to make sure that employers only hire legally authorized workers. Well, you know, that system already exists. We have the E-Verify system. It is working. If the president really wanted to do it, he wouldn't have to wait until after we grant amnesty to people. He could do that right now. What we need to do is make sure that every employer is required to use that system, then hold them accountable. That would dry up the supply of jobs. In fact, we have seen that when the supply of jobs dries up, illegal immigrants decide on their own to go home. We saw this at the end of the Bush administration when President Bush, very cynically, after he was rebuffed in his effort to get amnesty, decided, you know what, I'm going to go out and show you I can do enforcement. And he did it, and the number of illegal immigrants declined for the first time in anybody's memory. Then we had the recession, which further dried up the supply of jobs available to everybody. And illegal immigrants, again, reacted rationally. Fewer came, more decided to go home.
Ira Melman is the media director for FAIR, the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Now we're going to hear from someone with another take, Mary Meg McCarthy, director of the National Immigrant Justice Center, which says it works to ensure human rights protections and access to justice for all immigrants, refugees, and asylum seekers. I asked McCarthy for her reaction to the president's big speech on immigration reform.
Well, we were pleased to see that there is some advancement in the political arena moving forward in working towards meaningful immigration reform. We're concerned that it begins talking about immigration enforcement when the U.S. government has spent more on immigration enforcement than in all of its criminal federal law enforcement agencies combined. In the past year alone, immigration enforcement has cost taxpayers $18 billion, which exceeds by about 24% the total spending for FBI, Drug Enforcement Agency, Secret Service, U.S. Marshals, and the ATF. So more enforcement is really not the solution. What we need is immigration reform to focus on creating a clear and efficient roadmap to citizenship and ensuring that the system has the due process protections.
I'm glad you brought that point up. You talk about a path to citizenship, and that is in the blueprint by that bipartisan group of senators.
Right, right, yes. And we were really excited to see that. But what I think is really important is that that pathway to citizenship be streamlined, that it's not a process for years in which we continue to have an indefinite underclass. Currently, we have 11 million hardworking immigrant women, men, and children who are making invaluable contributions to our community and our economic well-being. And to say, here, we'll give you a conditional status and just wait in line when there really is no line is not the solution. We need to ensure that they can promptly move into obtaining a legal status that allows them to integrate into our society.
There are some who call that path to citizenship amnesty, and they say that's not the way to go. They say that's rewarding people who broke the law. What is your response to those people?
we have a broken immigration system. This isn't about amnesty. This is about creating a legal structure that allows individuals who our country, our nation is dependent on to be able to obtain the legal status to which they are entitled. It's not about amnesty and giving something to someone who's here illegally. There was no legal way for individuals to come into the country. There was no line. There was no visa because our system is so broken. And yet our country depends on immigrants to work in the fields, to work in the service industry, to work in the manufacturing, to care for our children, to care for our elderly. And that has not been recognized. And now is the time that we recognize that our laws have to change. Our laws are not fair. They're inhumane. And our country has a history of recognizing when the laws are broken and need to be reformed. And this is a time to reform our immigration laws.
What would an ideal immigration reform package look like to you?
A deal immigration reform package would contain a number of things. One, it would ensure that immigrants and their families have a pathway to citizenship that is fair and efficient and includes some type of judicial review. And that when we talk about families, we're including LGBT families. That it will include people who have been living and contributing to our society for years and not penalize them for minor offenses. That there are waivers available, that immigration judges have discretion. It will allow individuals in immigration proceedings to understand their rights and have a meaningful day in court. Many people don't understand that immigrants don't have a right to appointed counsel. Even when they're detained, they appear in front of an immigration judge in an adversarial situation and are not able to properly represent themselves. They don't understand what the rules of evidence are or what they have to show to demonstrate that they're entitled to remain in the country. So we've seen hundreds of people who've been deported erroneously when they did have ability to obtain lawful status.
Mary Meg McCarthy is director of the National Immigrant Justice Center. You can find more of our reporting on immigration reform at fronterasdesk.org. You've been listening to Fronteras, a Corporation for Public Broadcasting funded journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KNAU Flagstaff, KNPR Las Vegas, KRWG Las Cruces, KUAZ Tucson, and KSTX San Antonio. We're on Facebook. We invite you to join the conversation and post your thoughts about our stories. For headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter. The handle is Fronteras Desk. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Our theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.